Hi, this is Sam.
And this is Inuel.
And this is Murderous Intention. Hey guys, so last week we did Yoo Young Choo, who had a very unique way of doing things where it was basically, if you were wealthy and elderly, let's put that in there, because it wasn't wealthy and young, you were wealthy and elderly, he yes. would go after you. Well, he only did about like what? I think maybe 5 wealthy killing.
Yeah.
3 was in one house, 2 was in the other. And then the rest were sex workers, you know, because he ended up getting a rage against women. Right. That was last week. This is this week. We have come to a new month. Besides it being WrestleMania week, which I'm so excited. Yay!
I'm okay about it.
You're okay about it?
I'm more interested in the Final Four and the championship game, the women's national championship game, than I am about wrestling, honestly. I will be seeing it. Don't get me wrong, I will be seeing it. But it's like, I'm more, like, I want to know more about, you know, anyway.
Yeah, no, I got you. So this month is Children Who Kill. And so I'm just going to say this. If you do not want to have a different outlook on kids, you can wait for us for next month. But I do say it will be a very good learning experience, because you'll get to see, you know, you get to hear what you need to look out for. What are some signs that are missed and how these kids evolve into this? And because remember, what they do as kids, they're going to do worse. If they're doing bad, they're going to do worse when they're adults, but they're going to be better at it, because they already learn from their mistakes being in the youth. So that's why I think doing cases about children who kill can also help us when it comes to the aspect of, you know, what we need to be aware of. What are the signs as parents that we need to say, you need to go see some therapy.
Yeah.
So as this case being Anuel's case, I'm gonna hand it off to him.
Okay. Disclaimer before I start, this case is in England, so there's gonna be words that I butcher. And anybody from England that wants to correct me, please do so. The links will be shared later. Okay. So this case is about Graham Young, aka the teacup poisoner. Young's early life, so he was born in Nesdean in Middlesex on the 7th of September 1947 to Frederick and Molly Young. He had an older sister, Winfred. Molly died of tuberculosis when Graham was 14 weeks, he was sent to his father to live. He was sent by his father to live with an uncle and aunt, while his sister went to live with their grandparents. Several years later, Frederick Young remarried to another woman named Molly, and the family were reunited. Young was fascinated from an early age by poisons and their effects. He read extensively about Hitler and Nazi Germany. William Palmer, the Victorian prisoner, also became a hero of Young's. In 1959, Young passed his 11 plus which I'm guessing is the something you have to pass to continue on in school, mm-hmm. and went to grammar school. He also started to read books on advanced toxicology. Now, he's 14 years old and reading. Is he 14? Yes. No, he's 12 years old, excuse me. And he's reading advanced toxicology. I don't know no 12-year-old that reads advanced toxicology.
Does he have like a high IQ?
He must. I mean, because he's learning, he's reading extensively about Hitler and Nazi Germany. And before he went into grammar school, he was reading books on advanced toxicology. He had to be.
True.
You know. In 1961, Young acquired autonomy from a local chemist. His knowledge of chemistry and poisons convinced the chemist that he was older than he appeared. He signed the poison registry in the name of Emmy Evans. He began poisoning his stepmother, father, and sister. Beginning in February, Molly Young suffered vomiting, diarrhea, and excruciating stomach pain, which she initially dismissed as Blasi attacks. Before long, his father was also suffering with a similar stomach cramps, debilitating him for days at a time. Then Young's sister was violently ill on a couple of occasions that summer. Shortly afterwards, Young himself was violently sick at home. It even seemed as if the mystery bug had spread beyond their household. A couple of Young's school friends had also been off school ill a couple of times with similar painful symptoms. In November 1961, Winfred Young was served a cup of tea by his brother one morning, but found its taste so sour, she took only one mouthful before she threw it away. While on the train to work, an hour later, she began to hallucinate, had to be helped out of the station, and was eventually taken to the hospital, where doctors came to the conclusion that she had somehow been exposed to poisonous Atropa belladonna. Fred Young confronted his son, but Graham blamed Winfred, whom he claimed had been using the family's teacups to mix shampoos. Unconvinced, Fred searched Graham's room, but found nothing incriminating. Nevertheless, he warned his son to be more careful in the future when messing around with the bloody chemicals. So his father already knew that he was messing around with chemicals and hadn't come to the conclusion that everybody was sick because his son was doing something, I guess.
But my thing is, why would you use the teacups to make your own shampoo, you know? Like, why use...
That's a great question that I have. I don't know the answer to. But, great question. Excuse me. On Easter Saturday, the 21st of April, 1962, Molly Young died. Her death was attributed to a prolapse cervical disc, which was believed to have resulted from a road accident much later, Young told police that he poisoned her with a lethal dose of thallium. At her wake, Young poisoned a male relative after lacing a jar of mustard pickle with anatomy.
Wait, I like pickle. Now I'm gonna be skeptical.
Do you trust your kids?
Okay, so I trust Joey.
Uh-huh.
I trust Sam.
Now let's get to the point.
Mika. Mika needs me right now. I'm her financial thing, so she needs me right now.
Until she doesn't.
I know.
We're just joking, obviously. Shortly after, afterwards, his father became seriously ill and was taken to the hospital, where he was told he was suffering from anatomy poisoning, and one more dose would have killed him. Young Zahn, who knew of his fascination with chemistry and poison, became suspicious, and did, as did his science teacher, Miss Hughes, who discovered several bottles of poison in Young's desk and spoke to the school's headmaster about his concern. They arranged for Young to be interviewed by a psychiatrist posing as a career advisor, who contacted the police after Young revealed his extensive knowledge of poisons and toxicology. Young was arrested on the 23rd of May, 1962, after returning home from school. Vials of tenium and antimony were found in his possession. When questioned by police, he confessed to poisoning his father, stepmother, sister, and school friend Chris Williams. Psychiatrist Dr. Christopher Fish testified that Young had a psychopathic disorder rather than a mental disease, and had failed to develop a normal moral sense. He felt it was extremely likely that Young would reoffend, and recounted a conversation in which Young said, "I am missing my antimony. I miss the power it gives me." Fish recommended that Young be detained at Broadmoor Hospital, an institute for patients with mental disorders who have committed offenses. Dr. Donald Blair, another psychiatrist, concurred with Fish's viewpoint. Young pleaded guilty to three charges of poisoning his father, sister, and Chris Williams, and was convicted of malicious administration of a noxious sting to inflict grievous bodily harm. That was kind of long for, you know, poisoning someone.
Yeah. My thing is, how did he get these chemicals, though?
Well, I think it was from school because he was so into it. They found everything in school.
So while he was in chemistry class, he's taking... Oh, wow.
That's what it seems like to me, yep. He was not charged for murdering his stepmother, as her autopsy report did not list poison as the cause of death. The judge, Mr. Justice Stevenson, ruled that Young was to be detained under Section 60 of the Mental Health Act in Broadmoor Hospital. Furthermore, he was not to be released for 15 years without the approval of the Home Secretary. At age 14, Young was among Broadmoor's youngest ever inmates, though not the youngest. In 1885, Bill Gills was sent to Broadmoor at the age of 10. Gills died at the institution shortly before Young's arrival. During Young's time at Broadmoor, there were a number of poisoning incidents. Soon after his arrival, George Burridge, a fellow inmate, died of cyanide poisoning. Young was suspected by some staff and inmates, not least because he enjoyed explaining in detail how cyanide can be extracted from laurel leaves. The grounds around Broadmoor were covered in laurel bushes. However, Young's involvement was never proven, and the death was officially ruled a suicide. Later, Harpic was found in the nurse's coffee, and the contents of a missing pack of sugar soap were discovered in a tea urine. He continued to read medical and toxicology textbooks obtained from Broadmoor's library. He also continued his interest in Nazism, reading William Shire's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich and Lord Russell's The Surge of the Swastika. At one point, he grew a toothbrush mustache and took to mimicking the speeches of Hitler and listening to Wagner. Young first applied for release from Broadmoor in 1965. His father, Winfred attended the tribunal and stated that if Young was released, none of his relatives would be willing to house him. Fred Young also told the hearing that his son should never be released. Young's application was rejected. In June 1970, after nearly 8 years in Brock Manor, Edwin Ugrin, the prison psychologist, wrote to the Home Secretary to recommend his release, announcing that Young is no longer obsessed with poison, violence, and mischief. He is no longer a danger to others. However, Young remarked to a barbed wire nurse, "When I get out, I'm going to kill one person for every year I spent in this place." Subsequent analysis have been suggested signs of the autism spectrum of Baldwin in 1996. I don't get how someone can tell a nurse that for every year I've been here, I'm going to kill someone, and they're still trying to release it.
It makes no sense, because it's like he's honestly admitting he's going to kill people because him being in there. Even though these people have nothing to do with whatever he did, you know, like, and we're going to still try to release.
Yeah. I don't get it. So the Secretary of State later noted that the index offense for some felons sane carried a sentence of no more than 7 or 8 years. One of Young's fellow patients at Brock Manor was the criminal Roy Shaw. In his autobiography, Pretty Boy, Shaw recounted his friendship with Young. After his release, so this is later crimes, by the way.
Okay.
After his release from Brock Manor in February 1971, Young initially stayed with his sister Winfred and her husband in Hemel Hempstead. Within weeks, he had resumed his interest in poisons. He resumed his interest in poisons and attempt to acquire poisons from John Bell and Coyen in Wigmore Street was unsuccessful, as the chemist refused to sell them without written authorization. Young duly returned with the required authorization on Bedford College headed notepaper, and was sold 25 grams of anatomy potassium tiger partridge. He told the chemist that he needed it for a qualitative and quantitative analysis. He later returned to the same chemist to purchase 25 grams of thallium. And I'm sorry, my dogs are acting up. Why? Why are we giving him more poison?
I have no idea. I was about to say the same thing. Like, he was just in jail for poisoning. Supposedly, oh, he has no interest in poison. Says who? You know, like, I can tell you, yeah, I have no more interest in, you know, eating, having pretzels. Does not mean that once you turn your back, I'ma say, okay, I can't have pretzels anymore. No, I'm gonna be like, okay, I'm going to get my pretzels now. You know? But the fact that how he obtains the chemicals, and it's like, okay. You know? It's where it's like, why? How? I want his skills to be able to get people to just do what I want.
Yeah. I mean, and how he got the letterhead from Bedford College is another thing.
You know. Did he, like, forge it?
I mean, I guess so, but that's kind of hard to get the letterhead, you know, unless somebody just, he stole it from principal, you know, headmaster, whatever, you know, administration people. Okay, so there was another poisoning. Young attended a store keeping training course in Slog and stayed at a hostel in nearby Siffenham. He befriended 34-year-old Trevor Sparks, another resident of the hostel, and the two occasionally visited the pub together or shared a bottle of wine in Sparks' room. Young would later confess to poisoning Sparks with antimony, sodium tartrate. On the night of February 10th, Sparks was violently sick, had diarrhea, pins and needles in his legs, and pains in his testicles. Early in the evening, he had accepted a glass of water from Young. Sparks' symptoms returned periodically over the following months. He felt so ill during a football match that he had to leave the pitch after a few minutes. Specialists were unable to pinpoint the cause, rigorously diagnosing it as a kidney infection, bowel infection, urinary tract infection, or stomach infection. Sparks left Slog in April 1971 and was gradually recovered, though he never played football again. Pins and needles in your legs. I don't get how kidney infection, but bowel infection, urinary tract infection don't make no sense at all to me. So, continuing on, Young secured a job as an assistant storekeeper at John Hadland Laboratories in Farringdon, Herefordshire, near his sister's home in Hemel Hempstead. The company manufactured thallium bromide iodide infrared lenses. Oh boy. Which were used in military equipment. However, no thallium was stored on site, and Young obtained his supplies of the poison from a London chemist. On his application, Young stated that he had studied chemistry and toxicology. He explained that his lack of employment issues was because he had suffered a nervous breakdown following the death of his mother in a car accident. Sure, we'll say that. Okay. His employers received references as part of Young's rehabilitation from Bodmeier, but were not informed of his past as a convicted prisoner. Young's probation officer never visited Young's home or place of work. Young left Slog and rented a room in Maynard Road, Hemel Hempstead, at £4 a week. His new colleagues found him unpredictable. He could be slurry and kept to himself, but on other days, he was more cheery. During breaks, he usually sat alone reading, invariably a book on one of his favorite subjects, war, chemistry, Nazi Germany, or famous murderers. He was not talkative unless one of the favorite topics was being discussed. Young's duties at Holland included collecting drinks from the tea trolley in the corridor and bringing them to the storeroom. Each employee had their own mug, which made it easy for him to target specific individuals for poisoning.
Wow.
Soon after Young's arrival at Holland, he started poisoning his co-workers, mostly focusing on his immediate colleagues in the storeroom. His modus operandi was to slip poison, usually antimony or thallium, into their tea or coffee. Victims would fall ill with symptoms that included vomiting, stomach pains, nausea, and diarrhea. Initially, the mysterious illness was assumed to be a virus and was nicknamed the Farringdon bug. Other explanations put forward were contamination of the local water supply and radioactivity from a discussed airfield nearby. So, 59-year-old Bob Eggle was storeroom manager at Highland and Young's immediate supervisor. Eagle was Dunkirk veteran, and Young, a Second World War enthusiast, often asked about his wartime experiences. Young began poisoning Engel in June, weeks after his arrival at the company. Engel had several days off work with diarrhea and severe stomach pains. His health improved after a week-long holiday, but on his return, Young put a lethal dose of thallium in his afternoon tea. Engel's condition deteriorated rapidly from this point. He complained of intensive back pain and numbness in his fingers and feet. He was transferred to the intensive care unit at St. Albans City Hospital, where paralysis set in. Young showed strong concern for Engel, repeated contacting the hospital for updates on his progress. Engel finally died on the 7th of July, 1971. A postpartum attributed Engel's death to a rare form of peritonitis known as Guillain-Barré syndrome. You know about that?
Mm-hmm. It starts off where you feel like you got the flu.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start slowly getting very tired and not really wanting to like move your body. And eventually it kind of works for different people. It works different ways. For the one that I saw, personally, it was where it started from the feet up. The person occasionally would get the numbness in their hand, right? And then numbness in their feet, but they took it as, maybe I'm just sitting too long. And they went one day to stand up and they had they fell right back down. When they stood up, they just fell right back down. Their legs gave out. And then all of a sudden, it was their arms, their chest. They felt like they had heaviness on it. So it was, it was very crazy because after a while, it basically has it where your body is suffocating.
Okay, gotcha. Young was chosen to accompany managing director Godfrey Foster to Engel's funeral as the representative of the department Engel managed. Foster recalled Young remarking how sad it was that Bob should come through the terrace of Dunkirk only to fall victim of some strange virus. So his reign of poisoning terror did not stop there. During Engel's absences, Young targeted Engel's assistant, Ron Hewitt, poisoning his tea with antimony. Hewitt had already accepted a job at another company and was working his notice. Young was hired specifically as his replacement. After leaving the company, he suffered no further symptoms. As a result of Engel's death and Hewitt's departure, Young was promoted to head storeman for a probationary period. For the next few months, his poisonings were limited to small doses of antimony in his co-worker Diane Smart's tea, usually when she annoyed him. Young wrote in his diary, Diana Smart irritated me yesterday, so I packed her off home with an attack of sickness. I only gave her something to shake her up. I now regret that I didn't give her a larger dose, capable of lying her up for a few days. So he knows the power that he has.
Yeah.
And he's just basically like, oh, you pissed me off. There you go. Here's some diarrhea, stomach pain, vomiting. Have fun with that.
Yeah, kind of like, here's a punishment. If you don't stop, it's going to be worse.
Right.
It's kind of scary that that's his mindset, being honest.
Yeah. So, and no, the poisoning does not stop there. On the 8th of October, 1971, Young put thallium citrate in David Tilson's tea. Tilson found the tea too sweet for his liking. Young had added sugar to disguise an unusual taste from the thallium, and therefore did not drink.
Okay, so he did what again?
So Young put thallium acetate in David Tilson's tea.
Oh my God.
Tilson found the tea too sweet for his liking. Young had added sugar to disguise an unusual taste from the thallium, and therefore did not drink it all. Young administered a second dose of thallium a week later. Tilson was admitted to the hospital with numb legs, breathing difficulties, and chest pains. His skin was so tender he could not endure the weight of his bed sheets, and all his hair then fell out.
Oh,
Young had, I'm sorry.
I said, "Oh my gosh!"
I think this is the highest dose that she has put up, because nobody has complained of their bed sheets being too heavy for their body, you know, before their skin.
Yeah.
But Young had a backup plan to visit Tilson in hospital and offer him a bottle of brandy laced with more thallium. Subsequently,
what the fudge? Like, he's already in the hospital. Why are we?
I do not know the answer to your question, but subsequently, Tilson recovered, though he was left permanently impotent by the poisoning. Poor guy. At the same time he was poisoning Tilson, Young also began poisoning another Hadland employee, Jethro Bat. Bat had become friendly with Young and would give him a ride home to Hemel Hempstead. Young admitted to administering 4 grams of thallium to Bat in 2 doses, enough to kill him. However, he found the coffee Young had made for him too strong and did not drink it all. Nevertheless, Bat was admitted to the hospital with stomach and chest pain, and his hair fell out. The thallium made him suicidal. Bat ultimately recovered, but like Tilson, he was also left impotent. Young apparently felt some remorse for poisoning Bat, writing his diary, "I feel rather ashamed in my actions in harming Jay. I feel rather ashamed." Yeah, that's remorseful.
If he was remorseful, he would just stop and turn himself in. Say, "Hey, I've been trying to poison these people in an attempt to murder them. I'm sorry." But yeah, I don't think he was really remorseful. I think it just went the way he didn't think it would go.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. So, it continues. Young's third main target for poisoning was Fred Biggs, a 56-year-old local counselor and part-time employee at Headlands. At first, he was given an antimony promptly. Antimony. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm probably butchering it. Prompting the typical Borogodon's bug symptoms. Then on the 30th of October 1971, Young gave Biggs 3 doses of thallium acetate in his tea. By the following day, Biggs had developed chest pains and had trouble walking. Within days, he was admitted to Hemel Hempstead General Hospital, then transferred to the Whittington Hospital in North London, followed by the London National Hospital of Nervous Diseases, now part of the National Hospital of Neurology and Neurosurgery, His central nervous system deteriorated to the point that he could not speak and had trouble breathing. His skin also began to peel off. Young showed concern for Biggs' condition, continually telephoning Biggs' wife and the hospital directly to make inquiries. Biggs finally died on the 19th of November, 1971. So what I'm seeing so far is that he's progressing more and more and using his poisons at a bigger dosage to basically kill them.
Yeah.
Because he was fine with just poisoning them and just see their reaction, like, ha ha ha, look what I did to you, like, a little school kid. But now he's just irritated and does whatever he needs to do to.
Well, a quick thing about he was using thallium, which is actually one of our periodic table elements.
Yeah.
But it also says how it affects the body, and it affects your nervous system, your lungs, your heart, your liver, and your kidney. If in large amounts, eaten or drinking in a short period of time, it can temporarily cause hair loss, vomiting, diarrhea, and can also occur in where it results to your death if you're exposed to a larger amount. So I just wanted everybody to know how this one element is, like, dangerous to consume. But turn around, we use it every day. Like, no lie, we use it every day. And it's in the production of our electronic devices. It's used in fiber optics, camera lens, the switches, and foreclosures. They even use it in making our glasses. And I'm just like, oh, crap. And it's actually a gray metal. But right. Once oxygen hits it, it turns clear. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, this is very, this dude was very into his chemistry. I'm gonna say that. He seems very smart when it comes to that whole aspect. And it's scary.
For sure. And I mean, obviously, in the stuff that you just mentioned, it's not used in high dosage. It's probably, like, he was using 4 grams, and you probably use less than half a gram for the things that you were mentioning, electronics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so after all this is going on, the management at Headland became so concerned about the mysterious sickness that they initiated an investigation. Moreover, some of Young's co-workers began to have suspicions about him. Diana Smart noticed that he was never affected by the bug and suggested he may be a carrier of the virus. Philip Doggett informed the management of Young's unhealthy interest in poisons. The firm's medical officer, Dr. Ian Anderson, told staff that he had ruled out heavy metal poisoning as a possible cause, which led to an argument with Young, who insisted that the symptoms displayed by victims pointed to this diagnosis. Intrigued by the young storeman, who seemed knowledgeable about medicine, Anderson sought out Young after the meeting and quizzed him further. He quickly discovered that Young had a deep knowledge of poisons and toxicology, which prompted John Hadland, the firm's owner, to contact the police. The investigating officers noticed that the onset of the Boregdon bug coincided with the Young's arrival at the company. A police background check revealed Young's earlier poisoning convictions. Uh-oh, now he's in trouble. Young was arrested at the home of his aunt and uncle in Sheerness, Kent, on the 20th of November, 1971. Good Nothing thing. Incriminating was found on his person. He denied any wrongdoing, but as he was being led away, his aunt overheard him ask the officer, "Which one is it you're doing for me?" Excuse me, let me rephrase that. Or let me say that again. Which one is it you're doing me for? That's a weird question, guys.
Well, okay. So it could be two things. It could be like, are you saying that I killed someone? Or are you saying I poisoned someone? Like, what is my charge? That way you could take it as that aspect, or I can also take it as the aspect of who are you charging me, you know, these crimes about. Like, was it, you know, the guy from a week ago, the guy from 2 weeks ago, the guy from yesterday, kind of like that kind of ordeal. That's how I'm taking it.
Okay. That makes more sense than the way it sounded to me, but okay. So when police searched his bedsit, they discovered a large stash of bottles containing poisons, including 434 milligrams of thallium and 32.33 grams of antimony. And I'm probably saying this wrong. For anyone that's interested, ATI, excuse me, ANTIMONY. So the latter, 200 times a lethal dose. Other poisons in his possessions included atropine, aconitine, and digitalis. His lodgings were covered in swastikas and pictures of Hitler and other Nazis. Police also discovered a detailed...
Wait, are you talking about antimony?
Antimony? A-N-T-I-M-O-N-Y?
Yeah, antimony.
Antimony, okay. I knew I was saying it wrong. Okay, so his lodgings were covered in swastikas and pictures of Hitler and other Nazis. Police also discovered a detailed diary that Jung had kept, noting the doses he had administered, the effects, and whether he was going to allow each person to live or die. Upon further questioning by police, he admitted that the initials in the diary refers to his co-workers, F for Fred Biggs, D for David Tilson, and so on. He confessed to poisoning Eagle, Biggs, Bat, Tilson, and Trevor Spark, and said that he deliberately used different poisons in order to confuse doctors. He also boasted of having committed the perfect murder by killing his stepmother, Molly. He spent 20 minutes explaining to the officers the effects that thallium has on the human body. When asked why he had poisoned people who were his friends and colleagues, Jung responded, "Wait, what? One of my monitors went down."
Oh, okay.
Give me 1 second.
So what happened? I don't know what's up with this dude. Like,
yeah, me either. I'm gonna say that again because I don't know what happened to my monitor. But anyway, when asked why he had poisoned people who were his friends and colleagues, Jung responded, "I suppose I had ceased to see them as a people, at least. A part of me had. They were simply guinea pigs." Yes. Yeah. I see your face.
Yeah, they're just simply guinea pigs. I'm a trial and error on humans. You know?
Yeah. Okay, so we're getting to the final part of the trial and prison sentence.
Okay.
Jung was charged with 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, 4 counts of administering poison with intent to injure, and 4 alternative counts of administering poison with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. He pleaded not guilty, which made it difficult to find a barista willing to represent him. Barrister willing to represent him, and the trial date had been postponed several times. Eventually, Sir Arthur Irving, QC, agreed to defend him. John Leonard, QC, led the prosecution for the Crown. The judge was Mr. Justice Everly. The trial was held at St. Albans Crown Court and started on the 19th of June, 1972. Due to safeguards protecting defendants, the jury could not be told of Young's previous convictions for poisoning. Young retracted his earlier confessions to the police, claiming he had only made it in order to get some rest. Nevertheless, the evidence against him was strong. The prosecution called 75 witnesses to testify against him. Young himself was the only witness in his defense. Excerpts from Young's diary were read out in court. Young claimed the diary was a fantasy for a novel. Examination of Fred Bill's internal organs found tillium in his intestines, kidneys, muscle, bone, and brain tissue. The cremated remains of Bob Eagle, which had not yet been scattered, were also analyzed and found to contain 9 milligrams of tallium. The latter was the first instance of cremated ashes being used as evidence in a murder conviction, which is quite amazing to me that you can get evidence from ashes.
Well, because it's still bone, it still has the residue.
Yeah, but you would think that they would, when they put you in that heated box, as I call it, that is not 70 degrees,
Yeah, it's excruciating of a heat wise.
Yeah.
But remember, it's still where it's just pieces of bones broken down, yeah. And whatever content is in there is still in there.
Yeah, which I guess my surprise is knowing that that can be tested still. It didn't burn to a degree that you couldn't find evidence from it. So you learn something every day, as I say.
Yes, sir.
On the 29th of June, 1972, after 1 hour and 38 minutes of deliberation, the jury found Young guilty of 2 counts of murder, Bob Eagle and Fred Bakes, 2 counts of attempted murder, Jethro Batt and David Tilson, and 2 counts of administering poison with intent to injure Diane Smart and Ronna Hewitt. He was found not guilty of administering poison to Trevor Sparks and Peter Buck, and was acquitted on all 4 counts of administering poison with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. Through his counsel, Young requested that he be sent to a conventional prison rather than return to Broadmoor.
Mm-hmm.
His request was granted, and he was sentenced to life imprisonment to be served at HM Prison, Park Lane, and McGall, later changing to Ashworth Hospital. So they did change it to the hospital. Excuse me. During his stay at Ashworth, he was moved from cells due to him being able to make a poison out of 7 common household items with no antidote for it. So he moved regularly and self-searched. He would have regular visits from the medical director, and during these visits, Young said to the medical director that he had seen on the medical journals that a trial drug from America would be beneficial to him. They looked into this and ordered a batch from America and got him on a 2-week course. After 2 weeks, another interview with Young was arranged, during which Young informed the medical director that it seemed to be working, but the effects were off, and asked for the dose to be increased. This was done, and after a further 2 weeks, another review was arranged. During this review, Young asked for another solicitor to be notified as Park Lane had been overdosing him. He was later transferred to HMP Parkhurst. Wait, so the jail was poisoning you, or you were poisoning you?
He was poisoning himself because he was asking for an increase and they were just obliging.
My other dumb question for the day is, why the blank would you oblige him knowing that he knows all about poisons and he's probably trying to kill himself?
One less mouth to feed?
Well, yeah. I'm a big proponent on why the taxpayer have to pay for his jail time. So, yeah.
They probably figured. Remember, at that time, assisted suicide was not a crime.
Well, true. That's true. Okay, so while in prison, Young befriended Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, with whom he shared a fascination for Nazi Germany. Brady's 2001 book, The Gates of Janus, in which his discussion varies. He discusses various serial killers, including a chapter on Young. Brady wrote that Young was generally asexual, finding even discussions of sexual matters not only uninteresting, but also distinctly distasteful. Power and death were his... I'm not even going to try to say those words because I'm... Sorry, my vocabulary does not understand neither of those words. So anyway... Elsewhere, Brady stated that it was difficult to empathize with Graham Young. Young died in the cell at Parkhurst Prison on the evening of the 1st of August, 1990, 1 month before his 43rd birthday. The cause of death was listed as myocardial infarction. At an inquest, at the postmortem, as Young had no history of heart disease, it had been speculated that he either committed suicide or was murdered by prisoners or prison staff who did not feel safe around him. Yeah, I kind of believe that.
I can see it.
So what do you think about my teacup poisoner?
That was a shocking blow of that he was asexual. Because I was going to say, did he ever communicate with others? Like, you know, in the aspect of dating? And to get that last blow of he was asexual, that was like, whoa. You know?
That was surprising, for sure.
But the fact that he really, let's be honest, he really had no... He had no regard to human life. He cared two craps about it, you know. They were all, as he put it, in his own words, you know, they were guinea pigs.
Correct.
They were his test dummies, you know. So, yeah, honestly, like, this was like, whoa, OMG. Did not see this coming. I was thinking, you know, teacup killer, you know, are we poisoning grandma kind of effect, but he just took it up notches. Like, he went from pow pow pow, and the thing is, he used his ability and his fascination with chemicals and everything to basically like amplify his pattern to kill. And that's just like, that's crazy. So he was very smart but very dumb. He was like a wow factor, but then it was like, you're fucking you're destroying this by killing. You know, you have a gift that you can go and become a scientist if you wanted to be, but you rather be average Joe killing average Joes.
Right.
You know? It's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, like, my whole thing on this case is this person could have been one of the world's most brilliant scientists, chemists.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he's just like, I wonder what I could do with this. Let me try it out. And, you know, and everywhere he went, including the jail, the hospital. He was poisoning this whole time. I don't understand. Like, the biggest part of the cases we have done is the pure stupidity, ineptitude of the people that are working and around these people. Parents, nurses in this case, stuff like that, that you know that he plays with chemicals.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting sick around you but him. Okay, yeah, he got sick in his house. But that could have been just a regular bug and not, oh, let me be smart, let me poison myself a little bit so I could be sick and nobody points to me. I think he just got the flu, the bug, whatever. And then as smart as I just said he was, and as brilliant as he was, you get caught by the stupidest way. Everybody in your job is sick, hurt.
Except for you.
Except for you. And then everybody figures out, oh wait, all this started, this Robinson bug started when you came into the building. And then of course the police find, oh wait, back when he was a little kid, he was in jail or in the hospital for poisoning people. I wonder if this, like, you too smart to be caught like that. You know what I'm saying?
True.
I just, like, listen, he's a mastermind, and I don't like to give, hey, you did so good, blah, blah, blah. He also kind of fulfilled what he said he was going to do. He said, when I leave here, I'm going to kill as many people as I'm going to kill one person for every year that was, and he was close if he didn't accomplish it.
He was trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Being honest.
How he got the chemicals is another question. Like, he got a letterhead from a college and passed it off like he was working there. And he had the thesis and everything of why he needed these chemicals. I'm like, wait, what? You had your thesis already planned out. You don't go to the college. And you somehow get the chemicals because of this letterhead. What?
It's the craziness, being honest. Yeah. It's just, back then, it was more simple. I feel like it was more simpler to find ways to do things. Now things are a little more complicated because now, like, some places have it where they can tell if something's copywritten and whatever, you know, and it's just like, ooh, you know.
But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt in saying that it wasn't copied. He probably stole it. And because of his knowledge and all that, had a good enough signature that says, oh, okay, yeah, this must have been, you know, professor, whatever. Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it, but yeah. I feel sorry for the people that died because of it, how they died.
Yeah.
A couple of men were impotent because of it. Like, I cannot even imagine any of that. But at the same time, this kid was not stupid, except for when he got caught.
True. That is the truth. So yeah, this dude was pretty smart in the way he did things, in my opinion. Just, I think he got cocky at the end.
Yeah.
So now I guess it's my task for next week to find someone who is in the same boat. So guys, let's find out what we're gonna do. Well, you'll find out what we're gonna do next week. I have a couple of things in mind, but this one kind of just threw me for a loop, no lie.
I didn't mean it.
Go ahead.
I didn't mean it.
So if you guys want to send us a case that you want to hear or a case that you know, you can email us at
murderousintentions21@gmail.com.
Or you can Instagram us at
murderous_intentions_podcast. And you can always tweet us at
True Cry Podcast. Got tongue tied today. Sorry.
The links will be in the description in of this podcast, so in case you missed it.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for today. Hope you guys enjoyed. See you guys next week. Bye.
Bye-bye. See you next week.